Welcome to the Plan Simple Meals podcast. I am your host, Mia Moran. Moms have the power to change the future, one meal at a time. The Plan Simple Meals podcast is for busy moms who want to create a healthier, happier home. Listen in for informative conversations and valuable strategies to make meals healthy, meaningful, and fun. Let's do this.
Hello, busy mamas. It's Mia here. Welcome to this episode of the Plan Simple Meals podcast. I'm super excited to be here today, and I have an amazing guest who is going to talk to us. I don't know if I tell you about the topic, I don't think you're going to think it's so amazing, but inflammation, which is at the root of almost every disease, and sometimes we don't know it. And he has so many ideas for how to live a life that doesn't cause inflammation. So it's amazing. And he's a guy, and you know that there aren't that many guys, and he has a British accent. So, you know, you're going to love it. But before we dive in, I wanted to just tell you a couple things. First off, I wanted to apologize. We seem to have skipped a week or maybe even two of this podcast, which was not my intention. But I am on book tour right now, and I've even have this whole bank of episodes saved up, but somehow I got in the car with my three kids at the last second. I was actually by myself. My husband had to stay back to finish up some work, and so the three kids and I, we drove to Denver, Colorado. I did three talks there. It was a blast. It worked out. I did it, but I have to say, in order to make it all work, a few things did get behind in the rest of the Plan Simple Meals world. And all of this is a little bit my next experiment, which is really, how do you plan a simpler life? I feel like I've got the food thing down pat, but life can get busy. So this is all part of that experiment. And the podcast is never going to be sacrificed in that experiment again, because I missed it. But I'm going to play around and, you know, see what really works this year. And so on the topic of the book tour, I've been to Denver. I've met some amazing moms. I spoke at three different Waldorf schools there. And now I'm in Utah, actually, midway, on my way to San Francisco, where on Sunday I'll be speaking at the International Veg Fest there. And on Monday night, I'm doing an amazing event with one of my favorites, mama business mentors, Megan Flatt, who's been on an episode of this podcast. And we are doing an event in Mill Valley at her amazing co-working space, which is called The Hivory. And if you're a mom in that area who wants a really great, nurturing, fun night out on Monday night, we would love to see you there. You do have to get tickets. So just go to plansimplemeals.com/events. And that's actually where the whole list of public events I'm doing are, so you can get them there, but that will give you the link to how to claim your space on Monday night. And then I'm working my way up the coast. It's a little bit backwards, I know, but we're going up to Portland, and we're stopping on the way in Ashland, Oregon, and then in Eugene, Oregon, and then working our way up to Portland. So super excited. I'm very excited that I now have my hubby by my side. Because I do feel actually quite strong for being able to make it all the way from Boston to Salt Lake City, Utah, all on my own. It's kind of cool, a cool thing that happened. But now I'm really excited for the support. So with no further ado, I would like to introduce our guest today. And I hope that you get a lot out of this episode and just take away a couple doable steps that you can implement this week.
I have on the episode a guy. Like, there aren't many guys on the podcast, but this is a good one. You guys are going to like this. His name is Neil Cannon, and he's the author of a book called Mojo Multiplier. And we met recently at a business event in California, and I was just really drawn to his work and his energy around food and his story. So I'm going to let him tell you all about that right now. So welcome.
Thank you, Mia, and thank you so much for having me on. I will just quickly say something. Mojo Multiplier is the book I wrote 4 years ago.
Oh.
And I think the one more relevant to what we're talking about now is The Vitality Secret.
Perfect.
So Mojo Multiplier is for guys to help them raise testosterone naturally And,
and it's
great,
the site I'm on.
Great
Got it.
For your audience. Although they probably know men.
They do. And, you know, it's funny because we have a lot of conversations about when, you know, a husband won't come along for the journey. So a right. lot of times I get a lot of conversations about a mom is ready for that next step. And, you know, dad wants meat and potatoes. And then, you know, kids get confused because their parents are arguing over what they're going to eat. But anyway, so
yeah.
This could be the episode that the whole family listens to.
Absolutely. Bring everyone together. Yeah. Interestingly, low testosterone, which is what the first book's all about, is very, very closely linked with inflammation, which is what the second book, The Vitality Secret, is all about. That was I learned more and more about that as I was researching my book, The Vitality Secret. So would you like me to go into why I wrote this book?
Yes, I would.
So having got a bit of a background, or quite an extensive background in nutrition already, I wanted to look into something my father was diagnosed with many years ago, which was chronic inflammation, because more recently he had a stroke, like a few years ago, like a minor one, thankfully, he's still around. And it really made me think, hang on, why did he have this stroke if he had this chronic inflammation? And I looked into it and I realized that the chronic inflammation led to high blood pressure, which led to a stroke. It's like a textbook sequence of events.
And did they tell him it was inflammation?
He had the diagnosis. And instead of the doctor saying, right, you have chronic inflammation, you need to change your diet immediately and you need to change your lifestyle so you get your blood levels balanced again, they just didn't give him the right nutritional advice or any nutritional advice. Mm-hmm. And so his high blood pressure could have been normalized, which is what I do with my patients now, by the way. I help people reverse inflammation and high blood pressure, pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes, all through diet and physical activity and managing emotions. So had he been offered the right advice, you know, when he had his blood done and they realized he had chronic inflammation, he would never have had to have the stroke. And, you know, he could have reduced his high blood pressure completely naturally. But because Western doctors aren't trained in nutrition, he wasn't offered this advice. So that's what really made me, it really kind of, you know, made my blood boil.
Yeah.
That he wasn't given any advice like this. And,
well, see, I'm surprised they even used the word inflammation, actually, which is interesting, you know, because I feel like that's the root cause behind so many things and that.
Absolutely.
We don't always use that word. I don't know. I just feel like that's not a mainstream word. That kind of feels like a health coachy word.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him telling me that he had it. And this is before I was even doing anything with nutrition. And I just thought, okay, well, what have you been told about it?
Interesting.
Sadly, you know, because of our Western culture and our conditioning, we're not really taught to think for ourselves. And we kind of rely on our doctors and we kind of hold them to the highest regard because we trust them and they will wear a white coat. By the way, it sounds really bad. I'm not trying to diss doctors at all because they're there to serve an amazing purpose and, you know, to save people's lives and help people. Sadly, when you understand the history of why they're not trained in nutrition, that's when you think, that's why they're not giving people the right advice to heal people naturally.
Right.
So, I think I just went slightly off on a tangent then.
No, that's good. That's good. It's funny because, and I actually think that not only do what might we not know from the doctor, what I found when I became a mom was that it's even harder to trust your instincts for somebody else, like your child's. And so it's almost like you're seeking, you know what I mean? Like it's different. Like I feel like with myself, I can go in and like a little bit try to play the detective and play a little bit more devil's advocate, especially as I know a little bit more about food and, you know, really understand whether I'm going to trust what the doctor's saying.
Yeah.
But when it's your kids, you're kind of like, you don't want to like risk something. And then you're in this room with this person who's supposed to be an expert and you don't really want to risk your kids' well-being. You know what I mean? It's different because you're not the person.
I've not really thought about it. In that perspective, although I do have two sisters and I have five nieces and nephews, and we have had these conversations, but yeah, you've got to kind of not only accept full responsibility for your own health, but accept full responsibility for your kids' health as well, which is like, more of a responsibility.
Yeah, and I remember actually very, very personally making the decision of with the pediatrician that I kept getting all this really weird, like as a I don't know, maybe we'll go into some of the specifics of food, but one of the things that's like pretty rampant in the pediatric world is drink your milk. And even before I got into all this food stuff, I always had this weird thing about milk. I didn't like it, and I didn't understand why we drink so much.
Did you think, hang on, why are we drinking milk that's designed for baby cows to grow fast?
Exactly. So I, luckily I like, you know, started learning enough that it was okay not to give my kids milk. But I just always had this instinct. But then you go in and it's like, you know, they're like looking at your 3-year-old, like, are you drinking your milk, sweetheart? And, you know,
Wow.
And my kids would just, they now go in and laugh. Like they literally burst out laughing, but it's almost not even worth explaining to the pediatrician. But on the flip side, this same pediatrician, you know, saved my daughter when she had a heart issue. So, you know, I feel like there's reasons for doctors, but it's not always those little things like that we can actually treat ourselves better if we just tune into our bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on the subject of milk, I did my own podcast interview just before I spoke with you, actually. And I was interviewing someone who's healed his fibromyalgia through nutrition when Western medicine said, no, it's not healable. It's you can't heal this. It's impossible. You're with it for life. And he was like, screw you. I'm going to do my own research. And he's been in his own journey for 2 or 3 years. Anyway, just he gave an example about milk because he was he had these really bad allergies. And he was just told to have a glass of warm milk and to kind of get over the allergies. And then he realized And then he realized that when he took out dairy completely, his allergies went completely just disappeared, gone.
That is my story. That is my exact story.
Really?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, I took it all out for the weight initially, but what happened was my allergies went away. Like, and I had like awful allergies. Like I had to take Claritin every single day so that my eyes didn't look like they were, you know, popping out of my head. And the second I took all these things out, dairy being a major one, I haven't had that issue since.
Yeah, it continues to blow my mind. I mean, there's so many different aspects to this story, which really goes down to conditioning and genius advertising campaigns.
Yeah.
And the people behind these, you know, it's just, I won't go into that at all now. That's like a whole other day's worth of podcasting.
Yes.
But when you understand about money and who's behind it all and, you know, the really, you know, what it's all about, it kind of really changes your perspective. Going back to milk, one of the main things I say to people when they go, what, you don't drink milk? And I was like, well, think of it this way. And I saw this interview with this paleo expert about 2.5 years ago, and I stopped drinking it myself. He said, think of it this way. Human breast milk is specifically designed, mamas are going to like this, human breast milk is specifically designed for baby human beings to grow fast. You get the right micronutrients, macronutrients, hormones, amino acids, proteins, i.e. proteins, and, you know, all the right concoction for these baby human beings to grow fast, to give them the massive boost in life for the first 6 months, 12 months, however long they're going to be drinking their mother's breast milk for. It's right. Specifically designed for baby human beings to grow fast. He said, similarly, cow's milk is specifically designed for baby calves to grow fast, to give them that massive boost in life, the right micronutrients, macronutrients, proteins, hormones for these baby cows to grow fast, which, by the way, look remarkably nothing like humans. And I do this, when I do a presentation on this, I like to show people a picture of a cow and a human.
Yeah.
And then hang on, that's a bit unfair. Let's go to a baby human and a baby cow. Yeah, you get it. They're just not the same at all.
No.
And we've been conditioned by very, very clever advertising and very, very genius people to drink milk, which from cows. And we're told it's, you know, good for your bones, it's got calcium in it. But when you understand what happens when you ingest animal protein, it causes acid in your body, which weakens your bones. And you're like, oh, hang on, that's a different perspective.
Yeah.
And then realizing you get way more calcium from vegetables like broccoli, and it's more you can absorb it properly because it's not an animal. Yeah, anyway.
It's awesome. And it's true. So tell us some of the ways, because I love this. I love you know, telling this to people, but it sounds better from you. So absorption is big, right? Because that's one of the things, is that we actually don't, we need more milk than, like, because we can't absorb the calcium from milk as fast as we can from plant calcium. So what are some of your favorite sources of calcium?
I'm a massive advocate for all the greens, yeah. You know? Broccoli, chard, and like broccoli is pretty high in calcium, and I have it almost every single day. But I just have as many greens as I can.
Yeah.
And I think I can drink almond milk, but that's had calcium added to it. But it's, I couldn't tell you what other sources I have really regularly for calcium. I don't think it's even worth taking a supplement, because if you have enough vegetables and you cover you cover like the rainbow, you know, eating the rainbow, you're gonna get it.
Yep.
And you know, I believe spinach and kale have it in there as well, which I have almost every day, or pretty much every day.
Yep.
So the thing about so I understand from calcium from cow's milk is when you ingest the animal protein, which you know, and the animal protein basically causes acid in the body, and the calcium in your bones actually neutralizes the acidic effect in your body. That's what its function is. So what actually happens is the milk actually ends up weakening your bones, not strengthening it. And it's the same with animal protein. You know, I eat meat, I eat fish, I eat eggs. But when I do that, I always have it with greens to alkalize the body as well.
Mm.
So you can kind of counteract the acidic effect of the body when you combine any kind of meat protein with the greens. But just having glasses of milk by itself doesn't seem very sensible to me. I'd like to find out who the first person was.
And it's very filling. Like, I feel like, you know, somehow we thought of it as a drink. But if you've ever had a, you know, if you've ever really sat with a glass of milk, it's like a meal. It's not a drink.
Oh, the other thing is, yes, it isn't. The other thing is lactase. Lactase is the enzyme that breaks down lactose, the sugar found in cow's milk. Most of us don't have that in our bodies anymore. Like 70 to 80% of the population is lactose intolerant because they don't have the enzyme lactase to break it down. And it's not surprising because we lose that enzyme after we stop breastfeeding. Mm. So some of us don't know how to break it down. Even if we don't have the acute reaction, some of us just don't know how to break it down, and then it triggers inflammation and whatever else. So, I think it's not a good one. And it's an interesting conversation because I have this conversation with my sisters, and, you know, I said five nieces and nephews. So,
it's a hard one. It's funny because I interviewed someone a couple months ago who's a doctor, and she also doesn't, you know, believe in dairy. And she says that it's just so ingrained in the medical institution right now, like as advertising as well, to the extent that on the first day of her orientation of medical school, it was sponsored by milk, like a milk company.
Jesus.
You know, so it's like, it's hard to like get out of that. So it's interesting. It's funny. What's the movie where Bill Clinton is interviewed at one point? Do you know what I mean? About food.
I don't know. Is it a documentary?
Yeah, a documentary. So there's a documentary. I think it's the one by Laurie David. And it was really interesting to watch because she interviewed a whole bunch of politicians, just trying to get them to answer all these questions about, you know, the meat and the dairy industries, and because they're so tied into our government. And those who sort of could take the blame and could, you know, say that it wasn't right were all those who had done the work themselves. So I feel like the best thing to do is just try. Like, all you really have to do is try for a week or two, and you can feel whether you're going to feel, you know, you feel the difference.
Absolutely. I'm totally.
And then you sort of know.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to argue with your pediatrician anymore.
Exactly. The beauty about being a human is you can try things out.
Yeah, exactly.
What I do as part of my program is I encourage people to take blood tests. This is something we're not encouraged to do at all. And there's so much we can do to prevent disease and illnesses when you actually get blood tests. You're like, we spend more money on our cars than we do our own health. And when you go, right, let's see what my inflammation is right now. You get C-reactive protein, for example, which is like an overriding kind of marker of inflammation. It will tell you your markers of inflammation. And you could go, right, that's unhealthy, so now it's time to change. Or you can get your triglycerides tested, your cholesterol, not just total cholesterol, but your LDL and HDL and your VLDL, which is your very low density lipoprotein. You know, that's the harmful one. The rest of them are fine. And then, you know, fasting blood sugars and triglycerides, and there's lots of other ones to get, and hormones and microbiome. But when you take kind of full control of your health and you get these tests, then you can go, right, what do I need to change? What's working? What's not working? Let's evaluate my health right now. And then you can go and test yourself again in 2 months and say, right, has this worked or hasn't it? Or, you know, let's balance these out. And that's what I encourage people to do. And that's what I help people to do.
So tell me a little more about that. So first of all, it's funny, as someone who knows that myself, last time I went in, I found myself sort of at a loss of what I was asking for. So I guess my first question is, what exactly are you asking for when you get a blood test? And I guess my second question would be, then you get the information back and you're with this doctor who's telling you to drink milk. So then what do you do? You know, what do you do with the information? I guess so it's what information are you looking for, and then what do you do with it?
So this is an interesting question, because without being a trained doctor, you can't you can't look at other people's blood,
right,
and help them with it. You're just not allowed to do that. So I actually suggest to people to get the blood test and then talk to their doctors about what the results mean. Now, they should be able to say, okay, you've got C-reactive protein of 3. It's on a scale of 0 to 3. That's high. And then I'll say, okay. I mean, I've had mine done twice, once each year, the last 2 years since being in LA. I've had to pay for it because I do. And I think the last one was about $250 or something. I did quite an extensive one. But it actually comes back with all the indicators of a healthy range for each one. And it will tell you if something's, high risk or whatever. To go one step further, I would say talk about the results with your doctor. Even if they're not trained in nutrition, they can say to you, okay, this isn't safe. This blood sugar marker here, you're pre-diabetic. You need to do something about that. Mm-hmm. And don't take drugs. But, you know, if you're pre-diabetic, that's an indication that you need to act now.
Yep.
And if you have inflammatory markers of, you know, anything over whatever is considered risky, I shouldn't really probably talk about it now, but you know, once you understand what's a high level of C-reactive protein, for example, then you can go, okay, I need to act now to balance this out. And once you know the kind of standard pattern that your body goes through to develop a disease, like there's quite a few significant markers you can look at and go, right, let's balance these out so I don't get a disease like cancer, which takes about 10-20 years to develop into something that's detectable anyway.
Right. So let's, so on that line, let's talk about this. So like the word inflammation,
okay.
I feel like so there's two things about it. One, I think that it's so cool that we're starting to talk about it, because I think there's so many, what I call them, I think it exists with kids, and it also exists with adults, but it's sort of like, I call it the skinny sick kid. So a lot of times people judge whether a child's healthy or sick by whether they're overweight or not. And I think the same can be true with adults, but inflammation can be, you know, in the most beautiful skinny person in the world.
Absolutely.
You know, that's what's going on inside. So I guess what is, you can get a blood test and you can start to understand what's going on inside of you, and that will sort of have some of those inflammation markers. But what are some other, like, what are some other things that you, how else would you know that you have inflammation? And I imagine that like 90% of us are walking around with some level of inflammation, right?
We are in an inflammation epidemic.
Yeah.
So great question, and I love that you've asked this one. I come from a family of eczema and asthma sufferers, which is a hereditary problem, health condition. And you can inherit these things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know until I started researching, you know, in depth inflammation, that the eczema that I'd had for my entire life was an inflammatory disease.
Yeah.
I also didn't know that the asthma that my sister suffered from is an inflammatory disease. I also didn't know that you can heal your asthma and heal your eczema by what you put in your body. And I didn't know that food is epigenetic, which means you can override your predisposition to getting something. You can override your genes with your food.
Yep.
So yeah, coming back to your question, if you have anything like eczema, asthma, psoriasis, Crohn's disease, IBS, even food and animal allergies, they are all indications that you already have an inflammatory disease. You already have a degree of low-level inflammation going in your body.
Yep.
So this is like your body's way of saying to you, hey, Neil, whatever your name is, what you're currently doing isn't working, and unless you change it right now, this can become chronic and it can lead to a really serious disease down the road. It's not saying to you, go to your doctors and get some drugs and hide the symptoms of what's going on underneath, because that's basically what we're conditioned to think.
Yep.
So going back to my father, he's had asthma his entire life, which meant he had chronic inflammation or a degree of inflammation this whole time. And being in a constant state of inflammation is like your immune system is under consistent attack. You're being attacked every day. And it's, you know, and that can develop into an autoimmune disease, which leads to rheumatoid arthritis, which is completely healable through diet as well, reversible through diet. And then, you know, hives or, you know, psoriasis as well as an autoimmune disease. Lots of it stems from your immune system turning on itself. And there are indications that what you're currently doing, what you're currently putting in your body, or what you're doing with your body isn't working. So it's like an action. I see it like an action signal. If you have something like eczema, it's like, it doesn't say, oh, you poor thing, you've born with this, just deal with it. It's your body's way of saying, no, change what you're doing.
Yeah.
And by the way, eczema doesn't have to just be down to diet. It's psychology and physical activity as well. And
let's talk a little about that.
Okay.
Well, let's start with a few diet things. So we already talked about dairy, and my big aha was that I took my daughter off dairy and her eczema went away in 4 days. But that was when she was three.
Right.
And I know that she's still prone to it, right? So she had awful eczema, like pain, like couldn't sleep at night eczema. And that all did go away at three. I do notice that her skin is more, like out of everybody in the house, more, you know, susceptible to having bumps or whatever. So she definitely is more susceptible to inflammation. So she doesn't have dairy actually or gluten anymore. But, you know, she might have sugar or something, and you can see that her body reacts to that sort of probably more than the other two.
Yeah. Okay. So
dairy is one thing I think that has, you know, that plays a big part. What are some other things that you suggest to people who are trying to have anti-inflammatory diets?
Yeah. I mean, you've touched on gluten already. Gluten's the protein in wheat, which has been so mutated. I used to use the word genetically modified. It's been mutated through a process called mutagenesis, which has meant that, like, I think there's about 14 added proteins these days compared to the ancient wheat grain some 10,000 years ago at the start of the agricultural industry.
Yep.
It's been so mutated that we used to have crops that are about a meter and a half tall, and now they're dwarf crops. They're like a foot tall. Sorry, I should have said it in yards.
Yep.
But they're now like a foot tall, and the idea is to yield more in less time, so there's more money for farmers and the agricultural industry.
Yep.
So it's been mutated so much that the quality of the wheat grain is so inferior compared with how it was originally, and this is why often people who go to Europe can eat wheat and they're fine, and then they go to America and they suddenly start bloating up and getting ill.
Why is that? Because the grain in Europe is better?
Yes.
Okay.
It's seeping into Europe, but it's way better. I mean, I work closely with this doctor, or PhD, should I say, in Phoenix, and he's an exercise scientist and naturopath and other cool things. And he gets phenomenal results for people. He's Italian. He has Italian roots. Mm-hmm. And he said exactly the same thing. He can't have wheat in this country, but he can have it in Europe.
I haven't given up. I mean, I haven't had wheat since I gave it up in Europe. Like, since I gave it up, I just, even when I go to Europe, don't have it. But I did have the experience before I knew I should give up wheat here that I was in Paris for a year, you know, when I was younger. And I remember eating like so much more, like thinking I could eat so much more than I could eat here and actually losing a lot of weight. So that's so interesting because I definitely like upped the, you know, I upped the gluten situation when I was there for sure.
That's very interesting.
That was sort of before I found it out that I shouldn't have gluten. But okay, so gluten, dairy, we've talked about upping vegetables. Anything else that
Hugely. I mean, the easiest way to look at it is just to have a really clean, real food diet.
Yep.
So if you have anything that comes in a box, don't have it.
Yeah.
It's going to have preservatives in it. It's going to have artificial flavorings in it. It's probably going to have some kind of trans fats in it or hydrogenated oils.
Yep.
If you understood the process that these hydrogenated oils go through to actually create this man-made oil, you'd go, holy chisel, there's no way I'm going to put that in my body. But it's in so many different things.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I think even America has banned trans fats now in processed foods, but it's going to take a year or two for this to take effect. And eating real clean food basically, and not having trans fats, not having dairy, wheat and gluten, and really upping your vegetable intake, because really we need the micronutrients from plant-based foods to support the immune system. And if you're eating dairy every day or several times, wheat and dairy several times a day, your immune system is going to be under consistent attack. And by the way, you can't have a healthy immune system if you have inflammation. By definition, you can't have the two don't go hand in hand. And inflammation, we now know, leads to every chronic disease there is. Chronic inflammation leads to every chronic disease. So, and by the way, cancer cannot grow in a healthy immune system. So if you've got inflammation, it means your immune system is suppressed. So what I would really suggest is having like, making the majority of your diet plant-based foods, and preferably raw. There's at least kind of 50% raw. Apparently, this is pretty challenging to do, to be honest. But you know, make the majority of it plants and organic, preferably. I know it's more expensive. I really do believe that it's the best investment you can make in the world, in your health, is in food. Just organic everything, really, if funds do permit. And if they don't permit, someone asked me this question yesterday, there's always a way to make up the extra somehow. And also think of it as an investment in your health now, because in the States, the number one reason for bankruptcy is medical bills. So a lot of people just lose all their money towards the end of their life because they're not looked after their health earlier on, when they could have done stuff like, eat real food and been healthy till the day they die. Instead, you're kind of falling prey to this pharmaceutical industry and feeding it when you get ill, rather than just investing a bit more now and avoiding that later on.
Yeah, I love that analogy. And I'm going to forget where I was reading this, but I love the analogy of, you could have a hamburger today with a bun and cheese or whatever on it. And, maybe you'd feel a little sick afterwards, but then you sort of recover, right? After 2 hours, because that's what we do. But if you do that every day, for some amount of time, you will get sick. And it's hard for us to think that way. But the same is true for the healthy stuff, right? So, maybe if you have a big salad for lunch today, hopefully you'll feel pretty good after it. But, it might not be that different than yesterday. But if you do that every day for that same amount of time, all of a sudden you're this totally different person.
Absolutely.
In a couple of years. So it's cool that it works the same way. And it's funny because I love that you said the raw food thing. I have sort of shied away from talking about that too much, but that's my background. Is what happened is I ended up going raw vegan for 2 years. That was sort of when I figured out about food. That was my first step. So actually, my book is very highly based on that experience, because I actually tell people a lot just to even tap into that whole world of raw vegan, because it's a great way to learn alternatives to dairy and gluten, because they're really using nuts and seeds and whatnot to get that sort of creamy dairy blatant thing that people are quote unquote missing. So it's, I think it's just a great movement to tap into to get desserts again that don't have all the crap in them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Also, just introducing, say, vegetable juices into your diet is another way of just getting those micronutrients into your diet. I'm a sucker for documentaries. I'm a geek. Mm-hmm. I love documentaries. You know, some of them are so brilliantly put together with like the leading experts in the world. And there's the Sick, Fat, and Nearly Dead 1 and 2 that have just shown the power of what happens in your body when you increase the micronutrient intake. And how, have you seen any of those documentaries? Sick and Fat, Nearly Dead. Sick, Fat, and Nearly Dead.
That's Joe Cross, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so he was a guest on the podcast. So
fantastic.
Yeah, a few months ago. So he actually told his story.
Yeah, okay.
So everybody can go listen to that episode too. Yeah, it's great. And he just actually, his latest movie is called The Kids Menu.
Excellent.
He interviewed a whole bunch of people about that, you know, about what's going on in the schools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a horrific situation what's going on in the schools. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, no, it really is. go ahead first.
Okay, all I was going to say about the vegetable juices is in the second one, I mean, in the first one you saw how he healed. Mm-hmm. He reversed like 5 or 6 different illnesses. He was overweight, pre-diabetic, high blood pressure, inflamed, he had hives all over his body. And his doctor just kept on swapping him over all these meds. And then he realized that he was going to die unless he took his health into his own hands with his own research and then, you know, took the nutrition route. And then he healed himself and he got off every single medication. I mean, that alone is absolutely phenomenal.
Yep.
The next one was, what really blew my mind was how a child who was 4 or 5 years old had rheumatoid arthritis. And the mother, very smart mother, started to introduce vegetable juices into the diet without changing anything else, just introducing vegetable juices. So you're just getting more micronutrients. And within a few months, the symptoms of the arthritis just went away.
Yep.
Or were minimal within a few months. And she said, there's only one reason this has happened, and that's by introducing vegetable juicing into her son's diet.
Yep.
I totally
love green juice, and it's funny because I talk a lot now about green smoothies because I just think it's so easy to start that way.
Definitely.
But sometimes I almost feel like a heroin addict for green juice because there is something about juice when the fiber is taken out. Like it literally, you can feel it go into your bloodstream.
Yeah.
Actually in a different way than even a green smoothie.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It goes straight in. Like an injection of awesomeness into your blood.
Exactly, exactly. So will you just quickly, before we have to wrap up, tell us, you kept saying like, you know, it's the food, the exercise, and the mind. So can you just, will you briefly tell us about those other two parts?
Let me just give you a quick quote on food.
Okay.
The food you eat can be either the safest and the most powerful form of medicine or the slowest form of poison.
I like that.
Yeah, and I've got another. I just brought it up because you talked about a quote earlier, and then there's another one that I love. When diet is wrong, medicine is of no use. When diet is correct, medicine is of no need.
Mm.
So yeah, I see it. I see like human health, our health, as a three-way thing. It's got to be your nutrition's got to be right. You've got to be physically active, and you've got to have a healthy psychology. And I've learned so much about psychology over the last few years. I've invested a lot of money into emotional intelligence and the likes of Tony Robbins. I went to David Destiny in December, and it's just, I've been following him for years and years and years, and I really recommend other people to as well if you're after that kind of stuff.
Cool.
I love that.
Tell me who that is. Who was the second person? I mean, I know Tony Robbins well, but what was the second person?
Oh, I don't think I said the second person.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Did I say emotional intelligence?
Okay, got it. Or Destiny. You said something with Destiny.
Oh, sorry.
Is that Tony Robbins? Oh, got it. Yeah. I love Tony Robbins.
Called Date with Destiny, and I went in December. But yeah, the reason I say that is because without a healthy psychology, there is so much that you can have your nutrition bang on, you can have your exercise and physical activity bang on. But if you've got a state of psychology, which is, you know, you're in a negative state all the time and you're stressed, and you know, you've got these pent up emotions and trauma from the past, that itself can feed disease.
Yeah.
I mean, the chances are your psychology is going to be, in fact, this is a fact, your psychology is going to be in a way better state if you're feeding your body correctly and you're moving every day, because, you know, moving is one of the best forms of emotional renewal. Yep. According to Tony Schwartz, who wrote The Power of Full Engagement, aerobic activity is the number one method for emotional renewal.
Yep.
So this is why I tend to exercise first thing every single day. But yeah, so I see it as a three-way thing. Your nutrition's got to be spot on. Well, not all the time. We should be able to treat ourselves. We don't have to turn into food Nazis and never have anything nice. I just think for the majority of the time, nourish your body. You know, feed the immune system. Make micronutrients the most part of your diet. And then also fats. Get enough fat. Get tons and tons of healthy fats in. Because fats are essential for, you know, so many things in your body. Cell health.
And before we press record on this, you jumped over and had an avocado because you were hungry. I love that.
I did.
Be simple, right? All you have to do is have an avocado. It's so good.
I'm actually in ketosis right now, which means I'm not having any sugar or any high glycemic carbohydrates or sugar. So did I say sugar? Sugar, high glycemic carbohydrates, or dairy. Yeah. I mean, I don't do dairy anyway, but
I'll do
anything. I'll occasionally have mature cheese, but never drink milk. Because in mature cheese, the casein, the protein is gone, and also ghee or, you know, clarified butter.
It's so, funny, though, my daughter who's allergic to dairy, because I think kids actually can't have the lactose thing yet. Maybe because they're closer to being breastfed, so they still have that. They still have the enzyme in them, but they can be allergic. And it ends up that my daughter actually was allergic to the whole cow. So she can't have the meat either. Like the whole thing she's allergic to. And someone thought she could have ghee, but that made her sick too.
I'm guessing being you would have fed her real meat from grass-fed cows and no answer.
I did. I tried everything. It made her really sick. And the eczema came back like pretty much right away. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll see.
Yeah.
Over time.
I think we just need to listen to our bodies and
it's amazing to have a child who can't have things because it's such an opportunity to teach them to listen to their bodies, and she's quite inspirational.
Because
you know, she'll be at a party and, you know, say, like, you know, explain to people how she's feeling and sort of checking in on what's in the food, and people are always kind of like wide-eyed. that a 10-year-old would be having these thoughts about food.
Wow.
But she notices
cool.
the difference in how she feels, so doesn't want to mess up.
Nice
so
one.
Thank you so much for this time. It's been amazing. I feel like
thank
there's so many nuggets within this. And hopefully everyone's inspired to just sort of go do their next next thing.
Yeah.
Next small step. You know, it can be as simple as adding veggie juice. I love that.
Absolutely. Even if it's that tiny step, it's so good. Because one thing I've learned across my years of research is that we tend to be stuffing our faces in the Western world, but we're starving.
Mm-hmm.
We're starving, and sorry, we're stuffing our faces and we're diabetic, you know?
Yep.
We're stuffing our faces and we're obese because we're not getting the micronutrients into our diet. And that's why people get ill. That's why we have an inflammation epidemic, an obesity epidemic, a type 2 diabetes epidemic, you know? It's crazy.
Yep.
So if you do one thing, just up the micronutrients, up the vegetables, preferably in a raw form, and, you know, feels so much better.
Yep. I love that. So I love that you're here, because now this is going to be like my new resource for moms who are trying to get their husbands on board. So tell us.
Bring them on.
So tell us how people can get in touch with you. And then I'm going to ask you my final question that I ask everybody.
Okay. So the best email.
You don't have to give an email if you don't want, but
okay. I'll give a website then.
Okay.
My website is mojomultiplier.com. That's my blog.
Yep.
And you can contact me through that. Or more recently, the book site is vitalitysecretbook.com, and there you can download 2 chapters of the book for free. And and then you'll see a little video of me talking to you.
Well, and you get a lot of great information actually from signing up for that. So I recommend everyone does that, because I did that, and it's filled with great. It feels like very backup and researched information. So if you're doubt, I feel like it's such a great resource for people who are doubting, you know, any of this.
Yeah, I really I really don't want to be that guy that, you know, sends emails every day with just nonsense. I want to be the one that, you know, provides value so people open emails and feel that they've actually got value from the time they've invested to read that email.
Yeah.
So I'm really making a conscious effort to do that.
Well, you do a
Thank
good
you
job.
For saying that.
So the final question that I ask everyone is, tell us about a meal that had a big impact on you. And it could have been because of the food or the company or some major aha you had while having that meal. You know, and it could have been something from a long time ago or something recent that just happened. But just what's a meal that had a big impact on you?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Another thing. I guess I immediately think back to my family meals, actually. Mm-hmm. And I've been living away from home for the last 2.5 years, and it has its benefits, but it has its pitfalls as well. Like, I miss my family and my nieces and nephews and friends, of course. So, you know, I guess some of the fondest memories are sitting around the table, eating dinner with your family. I really think that's an important thing to do, to actually always have that time and just laughing with everyone and being silly and eating good food cooked by mom. Yeah, I guess.
I love that.
Giggles around the table when everyone is just on good form, you know, and the whole family is together. And yeah.
Awesome.
I guess that's the first thing that came to mind when you said that.
That's perfect. And it's funny because, you know what, I think I'm just thinking that was really unfair because usually people sign, we made this happen sort of off my calendar, but usually you get warned of that question. But I love that answer.
Right.
It's perfect. Because it's so important. It's so important. And I actually think that adding great food, of course, is important. But if you're feeling overwhelmed by that, a first great step is sitting at the table with your kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if it's not happening.
Definitely, definitely. Yep. Super important. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for this. And I hope everyone sort of looks up, signs up. It's been amazing. And yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much, Mia, for having
welcome.
Me on. It means a lot. It's been an honor to be on your show. So thank you.
So bye, mamas. I will see you on the next episode of the Plan Simple Meals podcast. Bye for now. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Plan Simple Meals podcast. If you like what you heard, the biggest compliment you can give us is to share Plan Simple Meals with a friend and subscribe, rate, and review our podcast at iTunes. I absolutely love sharing simple solutions to help busy families eat clean and live well. Visit healthymomsmeetup.com and come join in on the fun. In our free group, you can chat with me and other health-seeking moms, get new recipes and tips, and never be at a loss in the kitchen again. Come join the fun at healthymomsmeetup.com. I cannot wait to meet you there.